Hi everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. I'm John Steele and the next voice you'll hear as ever is Stuart Smith. Hello Stu, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, John. I'm good, John. We had a big weekend, so let's get straight into it.
A big weekend, yeah. You wait 4 months for a J-League game and then 20 come along at once.
That's true, Stu. Yeah.
So we should get right into it. We're going to start with the J2 match day, the much delayed round two. There were many, many exciting games, Stu, but we have to start with the Shikoku Derby, Ehime against Tokushima. Now, to set the scene, Tokushima are 3-0 up at half-time on goals from Ken Iwao, Yuki Kakita, and an own goal from Kosuke Yamazaki. All of the goals coming from corner kicks, which was kind of a theme of the weekend in J2 and J3. Can you pick the story up for us in the second half? Tell us what happened in the second half.
So in the second half, so Ehime made three changes at halftime, three of their five allotted or allowed changes. And yeah, the game turned and they came back into the game. I think they got a goal pretty early on in the second half
Yokotani.
Shigeru Yokotani, yeah, from a deflected free kick kind of thing.
That's right.
And then... Yoichi Naganuma won a penalty that was scored to make it 3-3 was the equalising goal. The second goal for Ehime came after, well, I'm not sure how to describe it, because Tokushima keeper Naoto Kamifukumoto made a great save from a header, but as he made the save, his face just smashed into the goalpost, and he had lengthy treatment. He had a bloody nose, and from the resulting corner, after I think it was like a 3 or 4 minute stoppage, from the resulting corner, Ehime scored their second goal, and then they went on to get a penalty, and then in the 96th minute, Fukumoto tried to play the ball out of defense, but he played it straight to an Ehime player. The shot came in, which he dropped, and I think it was, who is it, Nishioka?
It's Taishi Nishioka.
Nishioka Taishi, because there are two Nishiokas, right? Yeah, Nishioka Taishi scored the winner, and yeah, the TV pictures cut to a shot of Ricardo Rodriguez, the Tokushima Vortis manager, just his mouth was wide open, just aghast at what had happened. And yeah, it's a victory for the ages for Ehime, and there's a lot of things to unpack, which we don't really have a lot of time to unpack it in this particular podcast, just with like the amount of games we have to cover. But two things: one, the defending from set pieces was atrocious from both sides. And two, you have to wonder about Kami Fukumoto's kind of well-being after his kind of brush with the goalpost, because that looked and sounded really bad. And for him just to get up and continue, I wonder if it's... I mean, we've talked about this before, John, but we're both in agreement that there should be some protocol here. There should be... For a head injury, we're in 2020 now, and so I think there should be a protocol for if someone is even suspected of having a head injury. When there's no suspect about it, I mean, the pictures are clear, and the sound is clear. He should have been asked to leave the field, and Tokushima should have been allowed to bring a temporary goalkeeper substitute on, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think we definitely need... I mean, the J-League has had its hands full, obviously, over the past 5 months with COVID-19. But, we've talked about head injuries before on the pod, Stu. It's kind of annoying. We don't want to go over the discussions we've had before. But, yeah, some kind of standardised protocol, and especially not asking a player if they're okay to continue. Mm. That shouldn't be their decision, I don't think. Just to clarify, yeah, we should make clear. So, at 3-1... Kami Fukumoto actually saves the penalty, doesn't he?
He does. Sorry, that's it. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
And then collides with the post and hurts himself. And then from the resulting corner, it's 3-2. Then Kazuhito Watanabe makes it 3-3 in the 83rd minute. And then, yes, Kami Fukumoto, possibly concussed, makes these two errors, and Taishi Nishioka grabs the winner. So I think, I was racking my brains, as far as I can work out, it's probably the best victory Ehime have ever had, especially since it comes against the kind of, you know, prefectural rivals, or Shikoku rivals in the form of Tokushima, I guess. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how that affects Tokushima going forward, because obviously much fancied this season. Yeah, but incredible game. Anyone who's not caught the highlights, it's worth checking them out for sure. Okay, we'll keep it moving, Stu. I think so. Plenty of other games in J2 worth focusing on. One game which was 0-0 was the match between Kanazawa and Matsumoto, which we previewed a little bit on the show last week. It was a very entertaining game, I think, despite the lack of goals. Plenty of good saves from both goalkeepers, and Matsumoto ended up hitting the woodwork three times. Kanazawa hitting the woodwork once. Neither goalkeeper hit the woodwork, we should say, unlike the Tokushima game. And also there was a draw with lots of goals at City Light Stadium down in Okayama. Okayama 2, Yamaguchi 2. I thought Yamaguchi took a pretty enterprising 2-0 lead in this game, I think. And their Brazilian striker, Yuri, looked pretty effective. He set up Kazumi Takai for the opening goal and then scored the second one himself. But after that second goal, Okayama pulled one back through Shintaro Shimizu. And then the almost inevitable header from Lee Yong-jae made sure that it finished 2-2. Did you get a chance to catch either of these two games in highlight form, Stu? Was there anything that you noticed?
Yeah, I caught both of them in highlight form, and I don't know how it ended 0-0 in Kanazawa. I mean, the Matsumoto were much better than I expected them to be. That front three that they have of Sakano, Serginho, and Sugimoto, they look really lively. And Serginho and Sugimoto in particular, they kind of drift out wide, and they cut in, and they are kind of very difficult to defend when they come in like that. And I think that they surprised me with how good they were. Obviously they didn't get the goals to kind of stamp their authority on the game, but I think they were I think they looked pretty good actually. And I was and like thinking back to the podcast last week, maybe I was being a little bit harsh on their prospects, but at the same time, Kanazawa, they look really organized, exactly how I thought they would be. They're not flashy. They don't have kind of like the caliber of game maker as like Matsumoto had with Serginho, but they're good. They've got a really good midfield pairing of Ohashi and Fujimura Keita, and they'll be good, I think. And just briefly on Yamaguchi, that Yuri does look good. He looks big and he looks strong, and he for J2 defenders, that he's going to be a bit of a handful. I don't really know much about him. I think it was the first time that I've seen him play, but he looked good, and he looked like he'd be a striker that will be able to score goals, but will also be able to kind of hold the ball up and shield and create things for other players as well. And so, you know, Renofa, they beat Kyoto first up, and then they've taken a point at Okayama. That's not a bad start at all against two pretty decent sides. So, pretty good news for Renofa Yamaguchi, I think.
It was a good performance from Yuri. I think the words that sprang to mind, like busy, bustling, you know, aggressive, also quick. So, one to watch, I think, definitely. Okay, Stu, thanks for your analysis. We better move into the my preferred dominion, the Kanto region now. We'll talk about the Tokyo Classic briefly, the game between Tokyo Verde and Machida Zelvia. Now, this was 1-1. At full time, a brilliant curling shot from Taiki Hirato in the third minute put Machida in front. But after that, they were very defensive and kind of very well organised to keep the lead. Yuta Naroha missed a great chance for Verdi right at the start of the second half, and it looked like Machida had done enough to take all 3 points. But in second half stoppage time, Leo Takai, who's on loan from Gamba Osaka, clashed with Ryota Yamashita, one of Verdi's many rookies, in the box. Penalty was given, and a half-time substitute Kanya Fujimoto tucked it away just about. So it finished 1-1. Yeah, impressive stats from this game, Stu, or I don't know if we can draw anything from them, but 76% possession for Verdi and 914 passes compared to Machida's 221. So I think we can safely say it was a clash of styles. But both kind of equally fairly effective, because the number of shots and shots on target was pretty similar. So yeah, I don't know if there are any conclusions we can draw from this game.
Yeah, I'm not really sure myself. I'm a bit of an expert on high possession stats with very little to show for it from watching Aoki Takeshi's Gifu for 2.5 years. I think, I don't know, it's like you would assume that a team with kind of a higher possession percentage would be able to tire the team would be able to tire the opposition out. But what those stats say to me is that Machida were organized, and that they were able to say, yeah, if you want to pass the ball around the back, or if you want to pass the ball at the base of your midfield, you go ahead, because we're not going to move. We're going to sit in our, what do they have? They had like a 4-2-3-1 ish, or 4-4-2 with Hirata just dropping off.
Yeah, so, to be honest, most times when I glanced at the screen, it was two banks of four.
Yeah, well, so which is fine. Like, if that's how you are planning to set up, and as long as you're organized and disciplined, which for the most part Machida looked organized and disciplined, then I don't really have a problem with it. Like, they were away from home, and they were like preserving a lead. Like, I don't have a problem with it. It's up to the opposition to break you down, and like, it'll be interesting to see if that's a one-off for Verdi, or if that's the way that they're set up, or if Machida do the same at home. I think once we have a few more samples, we'll be able to make a more kind of nuanced judgment about it, I think.
Good point. Yeah, you're talking to someone that watched the Tony Pulis teams at Stoke for the best part of it, so there won't be any complaints from me about low possession or not many passes. Yeah, it was very interesting to see the two different styles kind of clash together. And yeah, Machida very unlucky not to see that game out, I think, in the end. Okay, let's stay in Kanto then, Stu, and talk about Omiya Ardija. They're one of only two teams to have won both games so far, round one back in February and at the weekend. Now, they won 1-0 at Jeff Chiba at the weekend. The goal was kind of awkward. It was a deflected free kick from Masahita Ono in first half stoppage time, but it kind of pinballed around two or three Jeff defenders. It actually went in off Issei Takahashi, the holding midfielder. So, yeah, it looked like an own goal to me, but I don't think he'll want it. So we can give it to Masahita Ono, I think. And yeah, there was a very impressive performance from Ipe Shinozuka in this match. I think in DAZN's team of the week, Masahita Ono's in the team of the week, but I think that's just because his name is on the score sheet. I think Ipe Shinozuka was actually the best player. Yeah, also just about in Kanto, Mito, who I think we both think might struggle a little bit this year, had a very surprisingly comfortable win, I think, 3-1 away at Gunma. They were in cruise control after a brace from Masato Nakayama, a new signing from Iwata, and Boniface Nduka with a header. Kohei Shin, who I still miss seeing him line up in YSCC colours, he got Gunma's late consolation. So what did you make of the highlights from Omiya's win at Chiba and Gunma, Mito's win at Gunma, Stu?
Do you know what? I think it might have, I didn't watch the full game of Jeff and Omiya, but it seemed to me that Shinozuka was a lot more kind of further forward than he usually played. I think like he was almost acting as a winger or an attacking midfielder. He looked like he was given a lot of space and a lot of freedom to use his energy and to use his skill. I mean, he is potentially the best player in this division. He is on his day. He is so good. And if Takagi has decided to unleash the full potential and just say, look, you go where you want to go, as long as you're involved and as long as you're impacting the play, then I have absolutely no problem with him doing that. He's really good in defense, but he makes his money when he just bombs forward, and he's got so much energy. And I think to see him popping up in the final third a lot more than I used to see him, I'm very happy about that development. I think he could, like I said, I think potentially he's the best player in this division. And I think that if Takagi has given him the green light to kind of decide where and how he wants to impact the game, which would be very un-Takagi-like, because he's very much a disciplined 3-5-2 kind of guy, I think that's a really good decision from Takagi. And yeah, like I can't comment too much because I didn't really see the full game, but just from the highlights, it looked like he was really good. With Gunma and Mito, maybe we got these two mixed up in preseason, because all the hype on all my hype anyway was about Gunma and their signings, but Omai wasn't in the squad. I'm going to assume he's injured, because he must be in the best 18 players that Gunma have. But this was like you said in your intro there, this was relatively comfortable. You know, Mito obviously lost a lot of players last year, and we're wondering about how they're going to replace certain players. But bringing in Nakayama, who is, he's not the most, shall we say, aesthetically pleasing striker, but he is difficult to defend against. He's big, he's strong, and he knows where the goal is. And this was a relatively comfortable victory for Mito. And if I were Gunma, that's two home games in a row where they've shipped in three goals. Like, it's not going to get any easier on the road. And if I were Gunma, I'd be slightly worried. I know it's only two games, but I'd be, there's a part of me that thinks they need to shore up that defense pretty rapidly.
Yeah, six goals conceded in two home games doesn't look good, does it? No.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Mm.
Fair enough. Okay, so yeah, I saved up another one of the crazy games for the middle of the wrap up, Stu. So let's talk about Kofu's game against the Niigata, which finished 3-3. My old ticker can't take it after the excitement of the Ehime game, all these high scoring matches. But basically, Arata Watanabe fired Niigata into an early lead here, but Kofu roared back with a brace from Dudu and with 2-1 up. But Watanabe scored again in first half stoppage time, so it was 2-2 at the break here, and it stayed like that until 9 minutes from the end, when Silvino, who'd come off the bench, kind of fired Niigata back in front. But a very odd goal from Shusuke Ota meant that it finished 3-3. In the fourth minute of second half stoppage time, he sort of chested the ball in, but from about 8 yards, which you don't see very often.
I watched it
a few times. I'm still not sure how that produced the goal, but it did, and it finished 3-3. What did you make of this game? This was a bit wild.
Yeah, but it's not unexpected, though. Niigata are going to be good to watch this year. They were good to watch last year with Leonardo as their focal point. But the front two that they started against Kofu, I think you've got Fabio and Watanabe. Watanabe is a really, really good player. He showed glimpses last year of being able to lead the line. But obviously, he was overshadowed by the exploits of Leonardo. But his movement is exceptional. Like, his second goal, he just drifts in between two defenders. He knows exactly where the ball's going to go. And his first goal was the result of an excellent team move. And he probably should have had a hat-trick. I think he had another shot saved right on the stroke of half-time, which was possibly the easiest chance of all of them. But I think, for me, it's good to see the return of Dudu. I think he was injured for long spells last year, and I think that Kofu kind of missed him, even though they finished in the playoffs. They missed his kind of X factorness, and he's another one. He knows where the space is, and he knows how to make things happen. And he's just like he's a good player at this level. And I'm not surprised that this game was a high scoring affair. I think you'll see a lot more high goal scoring games for Niigata this year. I mean, they've scored three in their first two because they beat Gunma 3-0 in their first game, and I think that just the way that they're set up is just conducive to attacking football. And I think these two teams will look good. Whether they're good enough to challenge for promotion, I don't know, but they're going to give a lot of people some form of entertainment this year, I'd say.
Yeah, all good points. And I was concerned that Niigata might be missing Leonardo's goals this year after he moved to Urawa, but no sign of that at the moment. It's very, very impressive. Very impressive goal scoring performance so far. Okay, Stu, we'll cover some of the other games or the rest of the games then from the J2 match day. Yamagata beat Tochigi 1-0 at home, which is not the best game, I don't think. But Shuhei Ozuki hit the post early on for Yamagata. That was an early warning for Tochigi. But then brilliant half volley from Ryoma Watanabe was the winner in the 18th minute. For Yamagata. Tochigi couldn't really come back. And there was heavy rain in Kyushu, at Transcosmos Stadium, but Nagasaki were able to win their derby against Kita Kyushu 2-1. Really thumping strike from Masashi Kamikawa put Nagasaki in front early on, I think in the fifth minute. And then the goalkeeper, Nagasaki goalkeeper, Toru Takigiwa, had to make a couple of good saves to keep them ahead. And then a very nice 1-2 between Luan and a slightly heavy-looking Victor Ibarbo made it 2-0. And I speak with confidence as a heavier man myself. And then Shintaro Kokubu was able to pull one back for Kita Kyushu with about 12 minutes left, but it wasn't enough. So Nagasaki 2-1 winners. And any comments about either of these two games, Stu?
Well, I think that Tochigi and Kita Kyushu, they're both winless, I think, because I think they both lost their first games as well. But I think Kita Kyushu have had a difficult start. They played Fukuoka at home, and now they've played Nagasaki away. And, they're looking like they could do with a break in the schedule. I think Tochigi have also had a difficult start. I think, did they lose their first game at Nagasaki as well, right?
I think. I got to check.
It's a long time ago. I think it was. And away at Yamagata as well.
Mm-hmm.
See,
mm-hmm.
I think for Nagasaki, the thing that interests me about Nagasaki is that they were able to bring those two players, Ibarbo and Luan. I think they brought them both off the bench, I think. I don't think they started. And see, like, they've got it shows that kind of if you can use your subs and your bench kind of well, which is a skill these days even more so because you've got five subs but you can only use them at three separate points, right? You can't make five separate substitutions, I think.
That's right.
Yeah. And so being able to use your bench players and use the full kind of remnants of the squad, because it's notable that as soon as Luan and Ibarbo came on, it wasn't too long before they set up and scored the goal, right? It can't have been that long. It must have been like 3 or 4 minutes. And I think that like it's possible, especially when we're starting this league, and particularly going through summer, like the starting 11, it's gonna. My feeling is it's gonna be a little bit like rugby, in as much as that you ask certain players to play all out for 2/3 of the game or whatever, give everything in the knowledge that they'll be coming off for fresh legs. To bring on. So I think like the usage of the squad and the usage of the substitutes it's a little bit of a different makeup this year, I think. And just in this particular game, I think we've criticized Tegura Mori or Makoto, the Nagasaki manager, a lot, and possibly with some justification in the past, but I think that he used his substitutes well, and I think in this instance that won them the game, and I think we should give credit where it's due. But I think it's probably something just to, after about a month or so, like I'd be interested to see the substitute usage and like kind of what like how what percentage of teams use all of their five subs, and I think it's going to be an added kink that, that the managers kind of have to factor in. I know you said a brief summary, but that was as brief as I could do.
Good use of the word kink, which I appreciated. Yeah, I think another point just before we move on to the next game is that, yeah, some players just have trouble lasting for 90 minutes. And I think I'm not trying to get on Victor Barbo's case, because I'm sure he could fill me in without breaking sweat, but I don't think he can last 90 minutes. I don't think Juanma or possibly Peter Uteca, who we're going to talk about in a minute, can last 90 minutes on the regular. So yeah, it's something that we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on in the rounds that are coming up, especially when it's a 3-game week, for example.
But I think sorry to interrupt, but I think that's a really good discussion point. Would you rather have, for example, Victor Ibarbo starting and getting knackered by an hour, or would you rather have him coming on with half an hour to go against defenders that have already played an hour? And I think that's where this is where the manager will have to start making kind of more nuanced calls. Mm-hmm. Like, just because I'm not sure it's going to be a case of the starting 11 is my best 11. I think it might be a case of this starting 11 have jobs to do, and then come the final 20-30 minutes, we have other players that have specific jobs and roles to perform. And I think that'll be an interesting variant of the J-League as a whole this year, I think.
Yeah, let's keep an eye on it. It's going to be interesting for sure. Stu, let's move on, and that's all the Saturday games taken care of, and I think we've still got just enough time to talk about the Sunday matches as well. Let's start in Okinawa. There was an entertaining 1-1 draw between Rikyu and Fukuoka, an absolutely brilliant run and shot from Takuma Abe after about 30 minutes to put Rikyu in front. I thought I was watching Satoki Uejo for a minute, because it's not really what you associate with Takamabe. It's a brilliant goal in off the inside of the post as well, which is always good. But just inside the second half, about 50 minutes in, Juanma Delgado very, very confidently stroked the ball past Danny Carvajal, made it 1-1. And from what I could tell, the draw looked like a fair result here. What say you, Stu?
Yeah, I think it was. It looked like a fair result as well. That Abe goal was superb. It was absolutely... I think he ran from inside his own half, and then just at the end of the run, just thought, yeah, why not? And just smacked it in. And it's not often you see kind of Cervantes beaten from that kind of range, but he really didn't have a chance with a goal. Avispa, I don't think they're at their best, but then if you have players like Juanma in the team, I think you're always going to get chances to score, and more often than not, that Juanma will make the goalkeeper work. And in this instance, he obviously got the equaliser. And I think both teams had chances to win it. And I think also you're looking at two of the better goalkeepers in J2. I know Danny Carvajal is just, I think he's just returned from injury. I think the enforced layoff because of COVID-19 has actually worked in Danny Carvajal's favour, because I know he had surgery over the winter, so he's still kind of probably just working his way back up to full fitness. But for Ryukyu, it's good to have him back. I think this is a good point for Ryukyu, actually, because Avispa are a good side, but Ryukyu to a certain extent nullified them. If I were Ryukyu, I'd be really happy, not just because Takuma Abe scored, but because he showed that he can kind of lead the line. Because obviously, I think that's probably what they missed once Koji Suzuki went last year. I think Uejo was a little bit a kind of player who plays off a front man. But I think having Takuma Abe in the middle frees up the side for whoever plays there, if it be Motegi or whoever it is. And I think it's a good point for Ryukyu, to be honest. There's positives for both teams from this draw.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, I think Juanma was getting a bit wound up as well. I think he got a yellow card at one point. So
he always gets wound up though.
Yeah. So good to see. Football is back when Juanma's getting booked and losing his temper. Okay, Stuart, we made it to the last game on the J2 slate for the weekend, but certainly not least. The big Sunday game, I think, with apologies to Riku and Fukuoka as ever, was the game between Kyoto and Iwata at the Sanga Stadium by Kyocera. Now, there was some amusement on social media, wasn't there, because Kyoto in their pre-match rehearsal on Saturday evening on the big scoreboard, the big screen, they had the Kyoto winning 3-0, which I saw was posted on Twitter. It was quite funny, but in the end it didn't turn out to be as hubristic as it may have looked, because they won 2-0 against Iwata with a goal in each half from Peter Utaka. The first goal was very nicely teed up by John Kanakubo with a chip over the back line, which earned him a place in the team of the week from DAZN. And I actually thought the second goal was really good as well, because Utaka is set up by Takumi Miyoshi, but if you look closely, the pass he's given is not great, but on first watch you don't even notice, because Utaka can just take it no problem and kind of gather it and sweep it into the net. But as a sort of first touch nerd, I was very enamoured with that goal. I also enjoyed the bowling celebration after that second goal, which was socially distanced appropriately, and had a star performance from Jordi Bias as he kind of wobbled for an eternity before clattering to the ground. What did you make of this game, Stuart? I thought Kyoto looked very good and Iwata looked pretty anemic and disappointing. But what did you think?
I don't think there's anything else to add after that, because I think that's exactly what happened. I think that what I would say is that, like, Utaka outshone Koki Ogawa. I think it was reasonable to expect that those two players would be kind of the leading lights for their teams. But, like, Utaka, still, he's got that initial kind of 2 or 3 yard burst of pace, because it's still there, even though he's, how old is he, 35? 34?
Nobody knows.
He's an enigma. But he's got that turn of pace, but he's also, like you said there, he's got really good close control. And it's not often you see a goalkeeper dive the wrong way from a shot, like from open play. Obviously, with penalties, you pick your side and make your choice or whatever. But Naoki Hatta, the Jubilee goalkeeper, was just, he dived completely the wrong way, like from the ball. But I think that's a combination of him being off balance, but also of the way that Utaka kind of sets himself, because it looks like he's going to go kind of near post, right? But he actually drags it across the goal. And I think that he'll be a focal point, but that Kyoto team, if they play like that, they look really strong. Like, they've got obviously Boyce at the back, they've got Shoji, Yoshihiro anchoring the midfield, Kanakubo, he's kind of been a bit not stagnant, because he's pretty old as well, I think, as well, but he's been a bit passive in the past 6 months or so. But that was a beautiful kind of chip ball through. And yeah, obviously with Utaka kind of up front, you've always got half a chance of nicking a goal. Very positive for Kyoto. I think they've got a huge game next week, which we'll come on to. But disappointing from Jubilo as well. Yeah, it's probably worth mentioning that this game was broadcast around the globe on the J-League's YouTube channel, and maybe that's why they decided to go for the bowling pin celebration to try and get those clicks and retweets. But very positive for Kyoto. For Jubilo, it depends whether you see this as a blip or a coming unstuck against a promotion rival. So again, it's probably it's too early to say. We need a few more kind of data points, but this was a very impressive win from Kyoto.
Sometimes an early kind of wasn't a drubbing, but Jubilo weren't really at the races. It sometimes can do the team good, you know, if it gives them a bit of a wake-up call and gets them fired up. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I've watched so many of Iwata's training games. They almost approached this one a bit like it was another one of those training games. And I think they got their asses handed to them, didn't they?
They did.
So, okay, where did that come from? I don't know. Okay, let's talk about the weekend coming up then, Stu, round three. Now, the lion's share of the games are on Saturday. We've got Matsumoto hosting Kofu. Niigata against Kanazawa, Mito against Chiba. I like the look of Omiya versus Gunma, because Omiya are going for three straight wins now, and obviously we mentioned Gunma have lost two in a row and shipped six goals, so that it's not Omiya away is not the game you want really in that situation. Machida are hosting Yamagata, but I think the game we've already maybe kind of hinted at, which looks really good, is Tokushima against Kyoto. How are Tokushima going to respond after that second half horror show at Ehime, and will Kyoto be able to keep that good form from the Iwata game going? How do you see that game panning out?
I think it's I think it's a really important game for Tokushima. I think that it, and I don't think it's a good matchup for them, because obviously Kyoto are coming in off the back of the Jubilo game, but they're also they're a very different team to Tokushima, and they're very physical, they're very powerful. And like, I think they'll try and impose their will on Tokushima, and it won't end 0-0, I don't think. But I think if Tokushima avoid defeat, I think it will be good for them. I think they just need to steady the ship. I think this week in training will be really important for Ricardo Rodriguez. I don't know what the approach will be. I don't know whether he'll make his players sit down and watch the game, or whether he'll just burn the tape and say last week didn't happen, just move on. I think it'll be a clash of styles. Obviously Tokushima like to knock the ball out. They've got quite I don't want to say petite, but they've got like a lot of small kind of technical players who are very adept at finding space in and around the final third. But they're coming up against one of their old boys, Jordy Boyce, who was there last year. And they've also got Ryota Moriwaki to deal with as well, who are both very experienced, and they're probably wise, especially Jordy Boyce, probably wise to a lot of the things that Ricardo Rodriguez will do. And so I think this is a really, really important game. And I think that if it's a draw, I think Tokushima will be more than happy with that. I think it's important for them to avoid defeat.
It's going to be an interesting matchup. If my wife lets me, I'll definitely watch it on Saturday. Other games on Saturday, Stu, Fukuoka are hosting Nagasaki, yet another kind of Kyushu derby. Nagasaki will be going for three straight wins in that game. That could be a good one as well. Kita Kyushu host Ryukyu. And then three games as well on Sunday, July 5th. Iwata hosting Okayama. That also looks like a big game. Tochigi against Tokyo Verde. And Yamaguchi against Ehime. I think Ehime might be, they'll be flying high after that win in the derby. So we'll see how they go against Yamaguchi on Sunday. I think we've got enough time for a quick J3 roundup, Stu. Is your body ready?
my body's ready. It's, okay. It's the brain you have to worry about, I think.
Okay, well, let's get straight into it there. So J3... round one, we're not going to go into forensic detail on all the games, but I'll pick out one or two that I'd like to hear your thoughts on. So let's start with the early kickoffs on Saturday in J3. Akita fairly crushed Iwate, didn't they? 4-0 in their Tohoku derby. Two goals for Keita Saito in the first half, and Naoki Inoue scored on his J-League debut off the bench as well. Staying in Tohoku, Fukushima beat Hachinohe 2-0 with two headers in the first half. Now their Nigerian striker Ismaila scored the first, and celebrated by taking a knee, which I think, as far as I could tell from the weekend, was the only kind of Black Lives Matter related celebration or noticeable kind of a demonstration. Ismaila probably should have had a hat-trick. He had two other good headed chances and missed them both. In Shizuoka, Numazu had to come from behind to beat Fujieda 2-1 in their derby. Fujieda were in front at the break, but Numazu came back and scored twice in the last 30 minutes. And the winner was a penalty that was awarded for an accidental handball, which I think is that's the rule now, so that's okay. It's amazing to see the defender get a yellow card. I mean, I'm not sure what his crime was, apart from having arms. So, crazy. Into Kanto again, Stu, and Sagamihara and YSSC drew 0-0. I know you're not enamoured of this game. I thought it was a bit better than you mentioned, but certainly not the pick of the matches. Sagamihara have got a new Brazilian forward, Romulo, or Homero, if you prefer. He had a shot cleared off the bar and against the crossbar. In the first half, that was about as good as it got. Because I don't have much else to do, I went back in time, Stu. That was YSCC's first goalless draw since a home game against Kitakyushu in round 18 in 2018.
Wow.
So that's YSCC's first 0-0 for 49 matches.
Jeez.
You're welcome, guys. Okay, let's get on to the Gifu match. Stu, they hosted Imabari at Nagaragawa. It finished 0-0. This was the game that we previewed in depth on the show last week. My thoughts, based on the highlights, I thought Gifu's goalkeeper, Takuya Matsumoto, who I know is coming from Akita, was the man of the match. And Gifu did nearly win it at the end when Shota Kawanishi's deflected shot hit the crossbar. So, what did you make of this game? I know you watched it in full.
Yeah, I think that Imabari looked good in as much as they were organized and they weren't afraid to play the ball around, and they looked confident in their own game plan. Sometimes when you get promoted teams or kind of new teams on the block, like it's easy for them to start to kind of think about the opposition a bit more. But what I think that Imabari did, and to this end, I think the experience of Hideo Hashimoto and Yuichi Komano is very Komano. He's not Italian. And I think the experience that those players gave them gives them a platform to be able to say, look, we know what we have to do, and we're gonna do what we do well. And I think that they looked pretty dangerous when they caught Gifu out in possession. I think the Japanese commentators are fond of saying, like, short counter, you know, when they're pressing the ball high up the field. Matsumoto made one really outstanding save and two other good saves. Gifu had a lot of possession, but they didn't really make Imabari's goalkeeper make any saves. Of course, you mentioned in your intro there that Kawanishi hit the bar with about 5 minutes to go with a deflected shot. Kawanishi was Gifu's best player, I think. Best outfield player, sorry. His position was a little bit, I wasn't sure if he was playing up front or in midfield. He was kind of caught in no man's land a little too often for my liking. I think I expected Gifu to win, but having looked at Imabari, yeah, they looked organized and they looked like they knew what they were doing, and they looked like they were planning to kind of cater to their own needs as opposed to kind of focusing on the opposition too much. And I think that will serve them well going forward. I'd be interested to see how they perform at home this week, because they're hosting Kumamoto. But I think that I think it was disappointing for Gifu not to score at home. We just need a few more games to judge how that result is going to look. And I think that at the end of July we'll have a slightly more kind of concrete idea as to how good both these teams are.
Yeah, okay, all good stuff. And I'm with you on short counter. It's like middle shoot. I'm not really sure what these distances refer to. Yeah, short counter sounds like a criticism of a bar or shop, doesn't it? Yeah, pros, cheap drinks; cons, short counter. Let's wrap up some other games, Stu, because I know you've got to get back to the day job soon. Now in J3 as well, Tottori just about squeaked past Seretse Osaka under 23s 1-0. Their rookie Yuya Taguchi headed the winner on his J League debut in the 88th minute, and it's a low knee from FC Ryukyu Hamon who took the corner and got the assist there. In Toyama, it finished 1-1 in the game between Toyama and Nagano. There was a really bad mix-up between the Toyama goalkeeper Kazuki Saito and defender and captain Junya Imase in the first minute, which almost let Nagano in for a goal, but they just about got away with that. Nobuyuki Shina then put Toyama 1-0 up, but then incredibly Saito and Imase combined and produced another double clanger again in the second half, and Hiroshi Azuma was able to grab an equaliser for Nagano. So that finished 1-1. I want to talk a bit more about the game between Kumamoto and Kagoshima Stu, because this felt like a heavyweight clash to me in the rain at Egao Kanko Stadium. So Kumamoto beat Kagoshima 3-2. Kumamoto were one up inside 4 minutes after a brilliant goal from Hiroto Ishikawa. I'm still not sure how he managed to get the ball to go up and down like that from the edge of the penalty area. And it was 2-0 after 15 minutes with Kaito Taniguchi scoring. Then Kumamoto sort of toyed with the self-destruct button. A bad back pass let Taku Ushinohama in to pull one back before half time. But in the second half, Taniguchi made it 3-1. Kumamoto had another goal ruled out for offside, which was just about correct, I think. And someone called Kenji Baba scored a penalty after a handball. But even though it finished 3-2, I still think Kumamoto were good value here. I thought they were on top for most of the game. What do you think, Stu, about Kumamoto Kagoshima or any of the other games that we mentioned?
Yeah, I think you're right. They were good value. Kumamoto were good value. They did exactly what they kind of advertised they would do under Oki. Takeshi Oki, their new manager. I think the weather played a part in this because it was like in Nagasaki, like Kyushu, Japan's kind of like southern main island, had really, really bad rain over the weekend. And in the second half, it got to the point where like the ball was holding up, players were slipping over and that kind of thing. Yeah, just your average J3 game in the rain, really. But they were good. This Taniguchi Kaito is a really good player. He came in from Morioka. Like, he was basically Morioka's only shining star last year, because they were dreadful. And putting him in a Takeshi Oki system is gonna kind of reward both of them, because they're going to fit each other perfectly. I think, you'd think that Kagoshima's two goals came from mistakes from Kumamoto. One was a bad back pass, I think. And, second one was a penalty. And, I think Kumamoto are going to be good this year. And I think they've got a little bit of... dynamism up front. They've got players that can interchange positions. Of course, it said this about all the games. We need a few more games in order to really kind of assess and take stock of where teams are. But that's a good win for Kumamoto. Mm-hmm. It's an important win as well. And they've got a trip to Imabari coming up this week, and so That'll be interesting, because it'll be obviously Takeshi Okada is the kind of head honcho at Imabari, but during the 2010 World Cup, when Okada was Japan national team manager, guess who his number two was?
You're gonna have to help me out. I was looking out of the window to see what was happening.
There you go. It was Oki Takeshi. So, nice. Yeah, those two have got a long history together, and I think that they'll be sharing a glass of sake after the game with each other, I would hope. It'll be interesting. But that was a good win for Kumamoto. Yeah, Toyama did their best to give Nagano the win, I would say, but they couldn't. And then, yeah, Gamba's under 23s came up well against Sanuki. So all in all, a relatively kind of exciting weekend in J3 as well as J2.
We didn't mention the Sanuki game in detail, so I just mention that one now, because I know you were living your best life, Stu, and you watched game in full. Sanuki lost 3-2 at home to Gamba Osaka's under 23s with four goals in the last 26 minutes. So maybe tiredness played a part. Shoji Toyama headed Gamba in front, but then a mistake from Gamba's goalkeeper Haruki Sanata let Iki Kawasaki make it 1-1. Sanuki then went in front through Mark Ajay Kurita less than 60 seconds later, but Toyama scored again to make it 2-2 with 50 minutes left. And then 5 minutes later, Shuhei Kawasaki this time scored a deflected shot, and Gamba Osaka under 23s ended up winning 3-2. I know you watched this game in full, Stu. Did you have anything that stood out or you wanted to mention?
No, I think that Toyama kid looks good. He doesn't like it. I'm trying to think of a player he reminds me of, and I can't, because he's so like skinny and dangly, and like he doesn't look like your buffed up like prototypical young player. He's just
he looks like a kid, right?
He looks like he belongs in the under 23s, but he's got this kind of like he's got this movement about him that his first two steps are really good, like and he seems to have this sense, or at least he did in this game. I'll be honest, I haven't really kind of watched a lot of him. Obviously, I think Johnny Nicol spoke about him on a previous podcast about how he has high hopes for him this year. It's my first time seeing him. Like, for someone who looks so skinny and gangly, he's not afraid to kind of contest tackles or contest high balls, and I think that he looked pretty good. And I think Kamatamari had a very young team. I think they had like 8 players in their squad that were under the age of 23, I think. So this is basically almost an under 23 game. And so I think, obviously they'll be disappointed to lose, but I think like this year for Sanaki, I think they've just got a kind of stabilized from last year. They've got a whole raft of new young players, so maybe blood them, give them time, and I mean, 5 goals, you can't really complain for a Sunday night, I think.
Fair enough. It's all good stuff. I take your point that it was almost like an under 23 versus under 23 matchup as well. But yeah, it was entertaining fair, I think, for the Sunday evening. Okay, let's talk about the games coming up this weekend, Stu. So round 2, this is the opposite of J2. So most of the games are on Sunday for J3 this week. But in the Saturday fixtures, Akita are hosting Fukushima. We've talked already about Imabari hosting Kumamoto. That's on Saturday. I think that's probably the pick of the round if you're a neutral, I would suggest. It looks like it'd be a good game. Fujieda hosts Sagamihara as well on Saturday. On the Sunday, Hachinohe hosts Iwate. YSCC playing Toyama at home, and at Nagano host Numazu. We also have the under 23 Osaka Derby, Gamba against Seretse under 23s. Now, that's being held at Panasonic Stadium in Suita, and it's 24 hours after Gamba versus Seretse in J1. That's 6 p.m. That's 6 p.m. on Saturday, and the under 23s is 6 p.m. on Sunday. So, I was had I had more time and not been sort of chronically lazy, I might have Googled, has this ever happened before, that, you know, teams have played, the under 23 teams have played each other 24 hours after the seniors. I think they should just add the scores together.
Like an aggregate thing.
Yeah, and then have like a sort of I don't know, group janken or something to see who gets the points. But that could be. I mean, I know we're on record as not really liking the under 23s being in the league, but I think if it's a derby, that's mitigates that. It's at least interesting, I think. Okay, we also have a Kagoshima taking on Sanuki on Sunday. That's two teams that lost 3-2 at the weekend, so it'll be interesting to see who can react better or who can kind of tighten up the defense for this one. I think I fancy Kagoshima, but Sanuki could spring a surprise maybe with that young team. And now Gifu, Stu, travel to Tottori. What do you think about this one?
Well, I mean, it's interesting in as much that we're trying to keep things local in J3, but that's a hell of a trip to Tottori on a Sunday night. Yeah, Tottori, of course, they beat Seretse's under 23s at the weekend. I don't think they looked that impressive, but then again, they probably say the same about Gifu. I don't know. Like, it's still a bit early to make kind of judgments about teams and things like that. But I think Gifu need to. I mean, if Gifu have ideas on promotion, that like they need to start kind of getting at least goals on the board. So I would expect them to go there and score a goal or two, but whether it'll be enough, I don't know. I think the good games this weekend, like you said, are in Imabari. I think that'll be a good game. Also, I'm interested in Akita versus Fukushima, two teams that won pretty easily on the opening day. I think Fukushima traveling to Akita will be a pretty decent game as well, and so there'll be good games all over the place in J3 as well this weekend.
Yeah, of course, I'm sort of hoping for slightly less incidents so that we don't have to rush through so many games on the pod next time. But yeah, I think there's some good games on the slate. I didn't really get a good read on Tottery because they were obviously playing against Saracens under 23 side. Mm. So yeah, and again, I think you mentioned Gifu looking, I can't remember the words you used when you were tweeting about the game, unbalanced or lopsided?
Unbalanced, yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see if that is addressed you know, in the game on Sunday. But yeah, I think the point that you've made a few times, and it's worth repeating, is it's early doors, so that's why we took a scattergun approach to kind of reviewing the games this weekend. So there's not really much point looking at the league table yet, I don't think, especially not if you're supporting Gunmar, I suppose. So yeah, let's reconvene next week, Stu, and we'll do it all again. We'll see how the J2 and J3 teams got on. Yeah, but thanks for joining me. Yeah, if I can recuse myself, the reason I was looking out the window is just because I've got laundry out and rain is forecast.
Oh, we've got properly heavy rain here. I think it's heading your way.
Yeah, I think you're bringing the you're literally making it rain, but actual rain, not money, which is disappointing. All right, thanks for joining me, Stu. It's always a pleasure. And we want to thank the listeners for sticking by us for the 4 months as one solitary tear drips down my cheek. 4 months where we had no new games to cover, but yeah, I think J2 and J3 for now at least back and banging, so let's enjoy it while we can. Where can people catch up with you if they want more of this sort of thing?
They can catch me at @sushi_football. How about yourself?
At J2 Canto Bites on Twitter, irregularly but consistently reasonable quality, I would say. That's what I'm told.
Quality, not quantity. Before we go, yeah. John, can I just say that the Patreons of this podcast have something special coming later this week? A bit of a labor of love from me, and so the Patreons will get that this week.
Yeah, I've had a sneak preview of that, and I can confirm it's excellent. And it's not just more rain. Stuart's sending me heavy rain, but lucky patrons get a. Getting bonus content. Yeah, but yeah, seriously, we want to say thanks to all the patrons who help us out on a weekly basis. I think we've mentioned many times, and Ben's mentioned on the big pod that we kind of only got the keys to this kind of converted garage of the Extra Time podcast thanks to the support of the patrons. So yeah, thanks. We really appreciate that, and we hope we're living up to your expectations, and we haven't set the bar too high this week. But yeah, thanks for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the show, Stu. I think we've got to leave it there because I need to scramble to get these pants off the balcony before they get soaked, and I think you have to go and make some actual money, is that right?
I've got to go to work. Me too.
I'll be doing that after the pants. Yes, okay. All right, yeah. Okay, glad you enjoyed the weekend, Stu. Hope everybody else did too, and yeah, let's do it all again next week. Okay, have a good one, guys. Talk to you soon. Thanks, bye for now.